Craig Bolanos, the co-founder and CEO at Wealth Management Group. Welcome back, Craig.
Hey, John. Good to be with you. Busy Friday. Newsworthy as always.
What are you thinking about? What's jumping out at you there?
Well, I'm thinking we got two problems that have gotten a little bit worse, and those problems being the inflation data. Well, it looks like the decline that was at a crawl's pace has now come, and it's fully stalled. And if the inflation data has stalled out and can't get lower, those rate cuts that you and I have been talking about, what's the over-under, John? 2.5? For
yep.
months we've been talking, well, all of a sudden the probabilities have been dramatically reduced, and it's got investors a little bit nervous. But the truth is, I think the situation has not turned bad. I think the situation's no longer perfect, and this is where good investors are going to stand out from bad, as good investors are going to make solid choices in the remaining months of the year.
What are those choices?
Well, for me, it starts with this. You know, what I'm visiting with clients on is I begin by saying the key reasons for the rally that started last October, they're not gone. I mean, let's look at them really quick and then give some people some investment ideas. I mean, number one, John, we still have solid growth. I mean, look at the economic data this week, from retail sales to Philly Fed to jobless claims. I haven't seen any economic data that's flashing major economic warning signs. And then I think about the looming Fed rate cuts. Again, we've got some mixed data now relative to the timing of the cuts. But I think it still seems very reasonable. The next move is to lower rates. It's not to raise rates. And then finally, the AI enthusiasm. Sure, NVIDIA is off its high and ASML threw some cold water on its face this week. But the AI enthusiasm and, more importantly, the adoption, it remains marginally intact. So you know what? This is just more of a moderation. It's not a reversal.
Are there some types of companies you think will better weather this current downturn than others?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that have remained. You know, we've talked before about whether small caps were finally ready to join large caps in the rally. And clearly, by the evidence that we've seen, small caps aren't going to be the place to be. The S&P 600 and the Russell 2000, the small cap indices, they've reversed hard based on this inflation data and the lack of Fed rate cuts that we've seen. So I think if people stay with what you and I have called before, great companies of America that tend to pay rising dividends, that's where people want to stay focused. And of course, that means places like technology still, healthcare, and let's not forget energy, especially with what's going on in the world today.
And bigger companies have the cash on hand or the resources to weather higher interest rates? Is that kind of what you're telling me?
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. I mean, you know, a good company that has plenty of free cash flow isn't going to have the leverage that smaller companies have. And therefore, when interest rates move up, you tend to see large companies perform better because they're not contributing as much of their profit towards their interest payments. And that just can't be said, because borrowing money is a necessary evil for small to medium-sized companies to fund their expansions.
So inflation stays stubborn. The Fed, therefore, won't lower interest rates. Therefore, the borrowing costs stay relatively high, or at least they're not going lower. 30-year fixed mortgage rates up again. I'm just sussing out in my head, maybe out loud here, what are the consequences of this? What happens now because inflation is staying stubborn? For instance, what happens to markets as well? What happens to my retirement savings?
Well, I don't think we're having a recipe where all of a sudden, you know, for some reason, John, everyone's gotten as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs over the last 2 weeks. That's my analogy. And let's put it into action. We've had a very good run. That's undeniable for everyone's 401k. But again, based on the facts, not the suspicions, the only thing that's changed is that the actual events they haven't lived up to maybe unrealistic expectations. The pullback has just started the process. The pullback, meaning the S&P being 5% off its high, it's just started the process of resetting expectations to something that I think is more realistic. So I view this level, this 5,000 level, plus or minus, that we're at right now, I view it as an opportunity for those who may have been on recession island for the last year and a half to start nibbling and getting involved in equities. But I don't think anything or anyone should panic, because I think the script is still intact because the data hasn't changed. The data is just not being viewed through rose-colored glasses anymore.
Craig Bolanos joins us to talk a little bit about the markets and your money. By the way, Craig, you like the idea of maybe nibbling at equities right now. But I think people are very interested in I-bonds and T-bills because 4 and 5% sounds pretty good to people.
I think 4 and 5% is not a terrible thing. And shout out to those Series I savings bonds that you and I talked about what seems forever ago. John, remember when they were paying 9.62%? That was glorious,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. You know, now remember, those same bonds bought back then are only paying 3 point something because they didn't have a fixed coupon. But you're right. New Series I bonds paying over 5%. Treasury bills paying over 5%. I think that's competing for stock market money right now. So ultimately, this is really all about interest rates when it comes down to equity investors, isn't it?
But depending on your horizon, you think this is a buying opportunity right now, right?
Oh, I still think if someone is looking for a way to create wealth, you know, in America, you either need to own a business, you need to be invested and become a real estate mogul, or you need to invest in stocks. There just hasn't been a better way to compound and grow wealth than those three items. And I think with everybody having access to a 401k, people having access to 529 college savings plans, if you've got a longer time horizon, aka more than 3 to 5 years, I think people can and should be investing because it has proven time and time again to be a recipe for long-term success.
Yeah, but you know, people writing those checks or every month having an automatic deposit into some mutual fund that they picked when they started their job, and each month now, well, you're right, we've had a nice run, but now the last few weeks, it's been going down, 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 down. And you think, am I a fool for continuing to put money in this sinking ship? Talk to that person, Craig.
You know, I think history is going to have to be our guide, because the truth is, history is the only guide we ever have. And John, I think about those investors that maybe first got started investing when the Dow crossed over 10,000. John, do you remember when the Dow crossed over 10,000?
I do.
I remember having the Dow 10,000 half. And we all know that soon thereafter, disaster struck in 2000, 2001, 2002. And then there's all the investors that first started investing in 07. And then we know what happened in 08, 09. But I look back at Dow 10,000. Where's the Dow today? It's at 38,000. I look back when people were investing at Dow 14,000. Where is it today? It's at Dow 38,000. So let's let history be our guide, that even if you're investing before a major trend reverses, and I don't think one is reversing, if time is on your side, you will be rewarded, because great companies of America continue to grow profits. And if you can't make the next Microsoft out of your garage, best you own some of that company, just as an example, longer term.
Talk to me a little bit about Netflix right now.
So Netflix, hey, this is another example of traders buying the rumor that there was going to be good earnings on both the top and the bottom, and then they sell the news. So Netflix, you know, has had a nice run since the beginning of the year. They beat on their earnings, but you know what people didn't like, John? They didn't like that Netflix told us, hey, starting in 2025, we're no longer going to report new subscribers. Well, that's something that we're used to. I mean, for Netflix, we're always used to looking at how many new subscribers they have. So the fact that they're going to stop telling us about that is a little bit disappointing. And I think that just means this is a company that's moving more into their maturity stage, where it's not just about market share, new subscribers. It's now about what's going to be their profitability, their revenue. So it's an interesting change. But the market's disappointed, and hence the stock's getting hammered while we talk.
Any other companies of note in that area?
Well, I think everything in tech is so incredibly interesting to talk, but I think what about all the companies that are in the Dow that don't get any fanfare? I mean, look at the results from companies like American Express today. Look at the rally you see in Travelers. Look at the very large bank, JP Morgan. It hasn't disappointed. Those are not solicitations for anyone to go and buy those stocks. But my point for investors is we should be looking not just at growth in technology, the Magnificent Seven. We should be looking in other areas of the market to diversify. Because if someone wants to get retired and stay retired, John, I think retirement's all about cash flow. And there's no better way to cash flow than to invest in great companies of America that increase their dividend every single year. And that's just going to lead you into other areas of the market besides technology.
Yeah, right. And you mentioned those a moment ago. What was it? Healthcare, banking. Can you just give me those headlines again?
I mentioned healthcare has been on a nice tear courtesy of all the GLP-1s and the drugs that are out there. I mentioned the mega banks, not the regionals. There's problems in there that everybody knows about for real estate. And don't forget about energy. You and I talked about energy a month ago, John. And what we talked about is we've entered the season for oil prices in April. In addition to that, energy is so underrepresented in the S&P 500. That means the stocks are cheap. Energy companies tend to pay great dividends, and I don't want to trivialize what happened last weekend with Iran and Israel. I cannot trivialize what happened last night, but it looks like we're going to continue to see some upward pressure on oil, and I think that gives people the opportunity to say, you know what, it's not too late. I probably ought to go and start looking at some great energy stocks, because odds are they're underrepresented for most investors.
Craig Bolanos is the CEO and founding partner with Wealth Management Group. He's in Inverness and Downers Grove. He specializes in spending, savings, investing, and impacts things that impact your chances of always having the money you need to have the life you want. You can call him at 833-WMG-PLAN. Nice to talk to you, Craig.
John, great to be back. Enjoy the weekend.
The warm weather is coming. It's definitely golf season. We thought we'd talk a little bit about getting the clubs and how that business is going in Chicago. Alan Markovich is the general manager of PXG West in Oak Brook. Alan, you're on WGN. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
PXG, what does that stand for? What's the X? What's P and G in that?
PXG stands for Parsons Extreme Golf. Parsons is after Bob Parsons, who is the founder of our company.
You have a couple of outlets in Chicago, right?
Yes, sir. We have two locations, one in Oak Brook Terrace on Roosevelt Road, and one in the north suburbs up in Northbrook, and that is on Techne Boulevard.
So you sell golf clubs, golf equipment. You fit people for clubs. I'm not just buying them off the rack here. I'm actually, are you cutting the clubs? Are you tailor-making them? Talk to me about the process.
Absolutely. So, yes, we are a custom fit and custom built golf club company. So you come in, it's an unbelievable experience where you get fitted for golf clubs. Golfers of any skill level can be fitted. And once we fit you and get you dialed in to the clubs that are best for you, we order them and have them built specifically for you. Every detail of the club is built specifically for the customer. And it only takes about 7 to 10 business days for those clubs to arrive.
And then what's the name on the clubs? What kind of clubs do I have?
So we have a few different lines because we like to accommodate all levels of golfers. Our newest clubs, our irons, are our 0311 Gen 6 irons. And our woods are what are called the Black Ops woods. It's our newest, most popular, most successful woods we've ever created.
And they're not wood, are they?
They have not been wood for a long time, but I'm glad we still call them that, kind of to pay homage to the origins of golf. But they are all the best modern available materials, including titanium and carbon fiber.
I have, I don't know if I still do, but I was carrying around a Taylor wood driver, which looks like a peanut compared to what the guys swing now and gals. and it's just kind of fun to get that out once in a while. But talk to me about the technology. Talk to me about the heads on the woods then.
Absolutely. So we are a technology-driven company that is at the forefront of everything we do. So as mentioned, we always use the best available, most up-to-date materials, including titanium and carbon fiber. There is a lot of research and development into our clubs. And because we are privately owned, we are able to lead with that technology where we are not stuck, you know, with any kind of ability not to make certain clubs. So we can really do anything and everything possible to maximize performance.
Yeah. Are the club heads still getting bigger, or have we maximized that?
I think we've about maximized it as an industry. There are always subtle differences to make in club head size and shape, which will really help performance. But there are limitations. So as an industry, we are about at the max of club head size.
Yeah, right. And then is that the most important thing, or is it the shaft and the bend, the play in the shaft?
You know, it's all of those things combined, and that's why the fitting is so advantageous. So the shaft, the weight of the shaft, the flex of the shaft, the style of the club head, even down to the grip, those all impact the swing and the performance. So every last detail is very important.
I want the kind of club that doesn't slice the golf ball. Are there certain heads, or is there some construction that would minimize some of my bad habits that way?
Absolutely. Most golfers, including myself, are slicers of the golf ball. And what's really unique about PXG with the ability to customize our clubs, we have weights in the head. We are able to adjust the hosel. We're able to look at different shafts. Through all those things, we can absolutely offset a slice. We can make your miss much less and keep the ball in play. So we would be able to help offset a slice or a hook or any golfer's miss through that fitting experience.
What's the club that everybody likes to buy, you know, play with? Is it the driver, or is it some wood, fairway wood, or what is the club that people like to swing?
Usually the driver, which is funny because it's also the hardest club to hit, but everyone likes to try to get on the tee and hit the ball as far as they can. We all enjoy seeing the professionals hit the ball 300 yards, similar to seeing a home run in baseball. Customers really enjoy trying to hit that long ball. So driver is probably the most popular. However, irons, wedges, putters, we offer all that, and we consistently see interest in those every single day.
Well, if you were smart, half the shots you should be taking if you're a scratch golfer would be with the putter. You should probably spend more time and money on your putter, right?
That is 100% correct, and that is why here at PXG we also do putter fittings, where we use technology and our master fitters to dial you into a putter. It will always be the club that you use the most on the golf course, yet it is often overlooked by many golfers of all skill levels. So putter is key and should be looked at in great detail.
Do you have a shape of the head on the putter that you think is maybe, there's so many different configurations there, and sometimes they've got a little line right in the center that you're supposed to aim for. Are there any best practices in putter design and technology?
Absolutely. So there's many different styles of head sizes in putters, more so than in woods or irons. We have what we call a blade, which is the skinnier putter head, all the way up to the mallets, which have a larger mass in the head. Those mallets are a little more forgiving and easier to putt with, and we often see those as a customer's preference. But we have alignment lines on all our putters. We have different weighting, different head sizes. We have 6 to 8 different putter heads, so we are really able to combine the customer's comfort and what they like with what is working best for them.
We're talking to Alan Markovich. He's the general manager at PXG Golf. That's PXG West in Oak Brook. So is it just the clubs then that you guys sell there, or do you sell bags and balls and all those other things?
Definitely not just the clubs. We do sell bags and balls. We also have an extensive and really popular line of apparel for both men and women that can be worn on and off the golf course in all climates, that could be layered. It's very comfortable and high performing. So everything golf related, from apparel to clubs, we provide that at PXG.
What's the story on golf balls these days? Are they going farther? Wasn't there some debate about the center of the golf ball and how that's being designed and built?
You are correct. Golf balls technology across the industry has gotten so good that basically the pros are hitting them too far, and it's changing up the designs of courses. So they have put some limitations on golf balls that'll be going into effect in the upcoming years, which provides limitations on what we can do to the golf ball. But most golf ball these days are a 3-piece golf ball, which is very high performing, and that is what we have at PXG. We're also very proud of our golf ball because it's at a much better price point than some of the golf balls out there now.
Yeah. Just talk to me a little bit about the pricing on this. I mean, it sounds really good, but maybe it's so particular it's really expensive, especially for somebody that doesn't golf as much as somebody else. Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. It is often assumed that golf clubs, particularly PXG golf clubs, are really expensive and not made for a newer golfer or for a golfer who's not very good. But we have many different lines of golf clubs, different options, different deals on packages for golf clubs. So when you come in, you will be able to look at clubs and apparel and accessories at different price points. So we are able to work with you on your budget, but also maximize your performance at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, it's golf season. Everybody's got that itch. One place to scratch it, PXG West in Oak Brook. Alan, nice to talk to you today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Goodman Theater front of house employees have unionized. They're the latest group of workers at Chicago cultural institutions to form a union. They voted 26-4 in favor of joining International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees Local 750. 47 employees will be part of the union, covering front of house, box office, concession, and facility staff at Goodman. The local successfully organized staff last year at Steppenwolf Theater. The chapter also represents workers at Broadway in Chicago, the Auditorium Theater, the Chicago Theater, the United Center, and the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority. A new report says artificial intelligence could result in a 900% increase in power demand by Chicago area data centers. 25 data center projects currently undergoing engineering studies would consume 5 gigawatts of power. That would equal the output of 5 nuclear plants. All 25 centers are within ComEd's territory, and the utility expects 80% of them to be completed. Bloomberg reports the data centers would initially use excess capacity on the regional grid. As for the future, ComEd says it will ensure its system can handle the additional power load. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. It's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Gardening guru Jim Fizzell joins us again. And before we get to the good stuff, what happened to you, Jim?
I was at my PT guide the other day, and this lady came over and she sat down next to me. And she said, "I know who you are." And I've never seen her in my life. She said, "I hear you every week." She said, "I've got a question."
He answered her question, and he'll have answers for us, too, after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today and every day. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Mr. Popularity, or Mr. Fizz, two big events coming up, Earth Week and Arbor Day.
And Monday is Earth Day. Earth Day celebrations all week long. There are all kinds of them around in the schools and in the park districts and in the forest preserve, but that's just a part of it. There's so many other things going on. You need to check and find out what's going on and where and participate in these. Arbor Day, that's a week from today. A lot of Arbor Day celebrations going on. Trees are important. If we hadn't had ancestors planting trees, we'd still be the prairie state, and the only place there'd be trees would be along the riverbanks. So you need to plant a tree. And you can attend one of these Arbor Day celebrations in your community. There are many of them around. And if you get a tree at one of these, plant it. You know, these are little sticks from whence trees will grow. As I go through Park Ridge here, every once in a while, I look at one of those little twigs that I planted. In fact, three doors down, I have one. It's a birch tree. It's 35 feet tall. Started out 3.5 feet tall. Maybe that tells you how long I've been around. But they do grow. Plant them, take care of them, and they will make trees out of you sooner than you think. If there's no tree planting ceremony in your community, you can always start one. You might even just plant a tree in your own yard. Plant a tree in a park or a school or a retirement home. It's a good time to be out. We can't do a lot of gardening yet, but you can go out and enjoy some of the other things that are happening. Enjoy this marvelous spring. We're having a dandy.
Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fizzell. Coming up on Monday, a farmer who raises those Costco chickens will join us. From the farm to your belly, it's National Garlic Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Aki Ito in Business Insider wrote this: ever since hordes of Americans began fleeing big coastal cities during the pandemic, I've been wondering when or if they would return. Sure, things are less expensive in the places they move to, and the quality of life is often higher, but more and more urban refugees have been pining for the things that they left behind, from culinary excellence to cultural diversity. And every week, she writes, it seems like I see a new story about some former San Franciscan or New Yorker regretting their decision to leave. Aki, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well put, that's the opening paragraph. But it's also the kind of work and the career path that they leave behind, too. I mean, the thrust of your story isn't just that maybe you're missing what an urban area has to offer, but it might actually be a bad career move. Correct?
Yeah. I think the things like the restaurants, you know, and like the diversity in general, those are the things that are easy to see, easy to miss. But I think there are all kinds of kind of hidden risks to moving away from a big city that was encapsulated really well in a paper that just came out from, one of my favorite economists. So that's what the story was about.
Hidden risks. What do you mean by that? What are these hidden risks of moving out of the city?
So this economist, Enrico Moretti, followed people who lost their jobs between 2010 and 2017. And he was asking the question, like, what happens after that job loss? And what he found was that where they lived made a really big difference in whether they were able to get that next job or not. He found that if you lived in a big labor market with a lot of employers who are looking for your exact skill set, then you were able to find that next job really quickly. But he found that if you were in a smaller labor market for your skills, it took you longer to find that next job. You were also more likely to be in a next job that wasn't right for your skills. You know, it was a bad match for your college degree. It's in a different industry than the one you were in. So that really goes to show that geography is destiny when it comes to the job market.
I understand the impulse to say if you were living in the city of Chicago or one of the bustling suburbs, you lose your job, you might want to retreat to a place that's less expensive. I mean, that makes sense economically, at least in the short run, right?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I think what we saw in the pandemic was a lot of people took their remote jobs from big cities like Chicago and New York and San Francisco and moved to more affordable places, thinking that they would, you know, keep those jobs forever, or if they were to lose them, they'd be able to go back on the remote job market and find a new one. But what ended up happening was that a lot of these, you know, they were either laid off or, maybe they got bored with their current jobs and started looking for a new one. But the remote job market has completely cratered. No one's hiring for a remote role anymore. And so they're finding that it's actually really hard to find that next job when they're in a much smaller city.
Hmm. That's interesting, because I think the assumption was we were talking about a brick and mortar operation where somebody would actually go in. But you could have retreated from Chicago during the pandemic, worked remotely in an exurb where it's much, much less expensive. But if that job goes away, now you're living in Manuka or further out, and you just don't have the interaction. You don't have the interface with some of these other businesses, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, in terms of your career, it's really bad because there aren't a ton of local employers around you, so you're more likely to have to settle for a lesser job. But kind of in the long term, it's also not great for your, you know, knowledge, for your productivity as a worker, too. There's this other concept that economists call knowledge spillovers, which is really important. So, like, you know, we talk about, like, going into the office to get, like, that in-person spontaneous connection with our coworkers. But we get that in a big city, not just with people who work for our own companies, but also who work for other companies, you know, our professional peers. And that's really important because over time, those encounters help build out our knowledge as professionals. If you live in a, you know, a really small town where you don't have any professional peers, you aren't having those professional encounters. And as a result, you're kind of getting left behind by all the people who are living in the big cities.
Aki Ito's story at Business Insider: moving away from a big city can seriously damage your career. Interesting story. Always nice to talk to you, Aki. Join us again.
Thanks so much for having me.